Wisconsin lakes are warming up, opening the door for swimming season. But as they warm up, some lakes will become unswimmable again because of cyanobacteria, a.k.a. blue-green algae. An analysis from the Environmental Working Group finds that Midwestern states, including Wisconsin, they say don't adequately test lakes for cyanobacteria. We're talking now about blue-green algae and how it affects ecosystems and human health, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Does your local lake go from yum to yuck as the blue-green algae shows up? Do you avoid swimming or fishing in lakes near you because you're worried about whether it's safe? Do you have questions about what this stuff is, why it's there? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Post on the Ideas Network Facebook page or email ideas@WPR.org. Grace Wilkinson is an assistant professor at the UW-Madison Center for Limnology and principal investigator of the Wilkinson Limnology Lab. Grace, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Good afternoon, and thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to talking about some of my favorite things, algae and lakes.
Now, let's start off with the basics of blue-green algae. And correct me if I'm wrong, but it's not actually algae?
Yeah, so what we commonly call blue-green algae or cyanobacteria are actually bacteria, but they do photosynthesize. So just like other algae or the plants that you might have in your yard or what's coming up in your garden right now. So they are green, usually microscopic. They are able to photosynthesize, but they are in fact bacteria. So a little different than what we would normally call algae.
And this is something that just exists out there in nature. We're more worried about the levels of it, that it's very existence, right?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, cyanobacteria are found in every ecosystem, nearly every ecosystem around the globe, in the terrestrial environments, in our lakes and rivers, as well as in the oceans. It's in fact the most abundant photosynthesizing organism in the oceans. But it is, it's about the high, when we get really high levels or concentrations of cyanobacteria, some of them have the ability to produce toxins, what we sometimes call cyanotoxins. And that can be harmful to humans and wildlife. And so it's when we get to those high concentrations and are potentially producing those toxins, that's when we get concerned.
Yeah. What kind of harms do we worry about when there's lots of this stuff?
Yeah. So cyanotoxins are actually, there's a bunch of them. One of the more common ones that we usually see in freshwater environments are microcystin. But what these toxins do to humans, if you accidentally ingest them and they're at really high concentrations, you can have gastrointestinal issues, so vomiting or diarrhea. It can cause headaches or fever. Sometimes there is a skin reaction, and so you can form a rash. And actually, if there's long-term exposure in high concentrations of these, they're actually toxic to the liver. And there's also evidence that, in fact, maybe they mess with your kidneys and reproductive system a little bit as well.
How widespread are problematic blue-green algae levels around Wisconsin?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. And I think that's a lot of what this report was getting at, was trying to understand when and where these toxins are produced, right? And so when we might need to have some concern about being in those water bodies. And so we tend to see toxic algal blooms show up, or what we call a toxic algal bloom or harmful algal bloom. So one that's producing these toxins, when there's really high concentrations of nutrients, when the water is really warm. So we tend to see them a little bit later in the summer. And that's when cyanobacteria are just really good at outcompeting all the other algae for resources. And so they'll proliferate and they'll produce these toxins. And so in areas where we have lakes and reservoirs that have really high nutrient concentrations, we might expect the possibility of cyanotoxins being present at times in that water.
Talking to Grace Wilkinson with the UW-Madison Center for Limnology about blue-green algae, that stuff that makes maybe your local lake unswimmable for parts of the summer. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Give us your lake report. A little early for blue-green algae now, but is this something you worry about from year to year? Do you have questions about it? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Maybe you have a picture you can share from years past. Now, Grace, this Environmental Working Group report saying, in effect, we don't know enough. We don't have enough data in waterways around states in the Midwest. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I think that the report highlighted a really important knowledge gap that we have right now about where and when some cyanotoxins might be produced. And so, you know, if we had all the money and resources and time in the world, it would be great to be monitoring for cyanotoxins all the time in all of the water bodies that we have. But we have, thankfully, 15,000 water bodies here, right, in the state of Wisconsin, just this beautiful water resource. But not all of those water bodies are ones that we're recreating in, necessarily going fishing or swimming in on a regular basis. And they might not have really higher nutrient concentrations that we associate with these cyanotoxins. And so while the report pointed out the need for more data information, I want to make sure that we're careful about thinking that about when is what's the best use of our resources, what's the best time and money spent by state or local government agencies to try to get a handle or an understanding about whether or not cyanotoxins are a threat in those water bodies. And I think one thing to also point out as well is while the Environmental Working Group report focused on state agencies and the work they're doing to collect this information and try to warn the public if there's a potential risk, there's also a lot of work that's happening at more the local level and local agencies, public health departments and whatnot. So I know, for example, where I'm calling from here in Dane County, Dane County has a toxin monitoring program for the major lakes like Mendota and Monona. Here within the city and within the county. So there is some information. And if folks are concerned or wondering about their lakes that they love to go fish and boat and swim in, I would encourage them to reach out also to their local public health department or county parks leaders to just find out a little bit more information about what's known about the lake.
You've mentioned a couple times, Grace, excessive nutrient levels in lakes creating the conditions for an algal bloom of this cyanobacteria. What nutrients are we talking about?
Yeah. Great question. So mainly we're talking about nitrogen and phosphorus. And really it's phosphorus here. When we have more phosphorus is usually what we call a limiting nutrient. So there's not enough of it around in the environment, but if you add more, you're going to get more algal growth. And nitrogen can also be limiting as well, but it tends to be phosphorus that we associate the most or is most tightly coupled to how much algae can grow in the water body. And so thinking about what are the sources of phosphorus that are making it into a lake and the sources of nitrogen and these nutrients, they're largely coming from the watershed, right? So the land that's surrounding the lake that drains into that water body. And so what we as humans do, our activities on the watershed and adding those nutrients, whether it's through urban human waste, agriculture, manure from livestock, all different sorts of kinds of sources of these nutrients, that eventually makes its way into our waterways. And that's what's fueling these algal blooms.
We heard from Dave on Facebook who says, I thought algal blooms are the unfortunate consequences of fertilizer and other runoff. Dave says he met a young woman from Finland while windsurfing on Lake Monona, that's in Madison, and she grabbed a handful of algae and lamented the condition of the lake. So fertilizer, one of those nutrient-rich products you were referring to there?
Absolutely. Yep. The fertilizer that we're using both in agriculture as well as on our lawns and whatnot. So there's lots that we can do as individual property owners, but a large portion of those nutrients in these watersheds that have a lot of farming or agriculture in them is coming from those sources. And so thinking about how we keep those nutrients on land and not in our waters is one of the best ways to start reducing these harmful algal blooms. But the kind of the sticking point or the problem is once those nutrients get into the lake, they tend to end up getting stored in the sediments and they can be released slowly over time. So it's this legacy of nutrients that have been added to this to the lake for even previous decades that could be fueling the algal blooms in part that we're seeing today. So even if we stopped adding nutrients now, and we didn't have any runoff from our watersheds, there's essentially this ticking time bomb of nutrients in the sediments or the bottom of a lot of our lakes that are going to keep fueling these algal blooms.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Kay is with us in Madison. Kay, hello.
Hi. Is this the type of algae that sometimes you hear about a pet, you know, a dog jumping into the lake and dying from whatever's in the water?
Okay, thanks for the call. We had another caller who couldn't stay on who's asking, if my dog drinks that lake water during blooms, should I be worried? You mentioned this briefly, Grace. This is something we worry about our pets in the water, right?
Yep, absolutely. Yep, I'm a dog owner as well, and I think about this a lot when I take my dog to go to the lake. So yes, this is that kind of algae that you've probably heard about in the news. Last summer, it was covered pretty widely when it was two dogs that died in North Carolina. And that's, if you think about our dogs, they tend to be smaller, right? And so if they're getting big gulps of water because they're out splashing and they get those cyanotoxins in them, it's going to have a much larger effect. And so it has led to pet and other animal death. And that's been well documented. So when I go out to the lake with my dog, I always check and make sure that I'm not seeing lots of green scum on the water. And what I'm really looking for is sort of a, when I say scum, it almost looks like pea soup or a paint on the water. And if that's the case, then I just don't let him get into the water and keep him away for any algae that may be dried up on the beach or whatnot too, because you know, being safe is the best if I can prevent it. And if we are at the lake, I just make sure to keep an eye on my dog afterwards. In case there was, when I turned my head for a moment, he had the opportunity to take a drink of water. So keeping an eye, and if you see any worrying signs, contacting your veterinarian right away.
We're picking up our talk now with UW-Madison limnologist Grace Wilkinson, looking at blue-green algae or cyanobacteria in Wisconsin lakes. Still time for your questions, maybe your experiences in your local lake at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Grace, I've been asking you about impact on humans and our pets. How about the actual ecosystem in a lake if we've got these problematic algae blooms?
Great question. So I think the first thing to start with is that algae are an important part of a lake, and cyanobacteria are a part of that as well, right? They form the base of the food web, and it's the energy that gets fixed through that photosynthesis that makes it all the way up to the fish that we like to eat and all the other animals, right, that we really enjoy seeing in the lake. But when there's too much of it, when we have these really large algal blooms, there definitely are consequences for the ecosystem. And one of those is that when that algal bloom is going, right, it's producing a lot of oxygen because photosynthesis produces oxygen. But once those algae cells, those cyanobacteria start dying, then they're going to start falling down in the water column towards the bottom of the lake and decomposing. And decomposition uses up oxygen. And so it's going to cause a drawdown in the amount of dissolved oxygen that's in the water. And organisms, the ones that we're really perhaps really interested in, if you enjoy fishing, right? Fish need dissolved oxygen in the water in order to survive. And so it can cause some pretty serious problems. And if those dissolved oxygen concentrations are changing too rapidly and over the course of a day or whatnot, that causes a lot of stress for things like fish. And so can lead to issues and even fish kills sometimes.
We got a call from Matt in Oshkosh who couldn't stay on the line. He says in Deer Lake in Sawyer County, Matt says, I've never seen a bloom until last year. And Matt wonders, is this an effect of global warming? Grace, is that something that's a part of the picture here?
Yeah. That's a great question. And I don't know for that specific lake, but certainly global warming and climate change are playing a role in what we're seeing happen with these harmful algal blooms. And the way that is sort of twofold. First, thinking about it in terms of global warming and the water getting warmer. Cyanobacteria love when the water is warm. And when it's really warm, that also makes that water more stable. And so they just thrive and they can outcompete and really get going. And that's when we know when they're at those high concentrations, they might start producing those toxins. And number two is thinking about climate change in terms of changes in precipitation. And here in Wisconsin and the upper Midwest, what we're seeing very clearly for the past couple of decades, and it continues to ramp up, is an increase in the precipitation intensity and frequency. So these really big storms happening more often and being larger. And when we have really big rain events or really big precipitation events, that's taking those nutrients from the land around the lake and bringing them all at once into the lake. And those nutrients can really help fuel these algal blooms and help them get going. And so it's that interaction of both being warmer, but also having a lot more precipitation delivering nutrients that is probably altering the way that these algal blooms and these lakes are changing over time.
Let's go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Karen is with us in Madison. Karen, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I just had a couple of questions. We live in Madison, but we visit friends during the summer at a couple of lakes. They have lakeshore property, and sometimes there'll be these blue-green algae blooms that get more noticeable. I'm wondering if there's Well, so we have concerns about the kids playing in the water and also the panfish that we catch off of the pier. So I'm just wondering, is there anything that a homeowner can do to kind of clear that from their, you know, shoreline temporarily so that it's safer? And then also, are the panfish that we would catch off here, are those safe to eat? Is there any concern with that? Thanks.
Yeah, those are great questions. So in terms of the algal blooms piling up along the shoreline, you definitely see that, especially if the wind gets going. You might wake up the next morning and something that didn't look like a bloom is all of a sudden a scum right in front of your dock. And that certainly happens. And so it's hard to overcome the forces of wind. And so there are certainly some lake management companies out there that might have some temporary solutions, although I wouldn't necessarily hold my breath. It can be really difficult. Again, you're trying to overcome the forces of water and wind, right? And where those algae are going, they can't overcome it. And it's hard for us to as well. So I think just using caution, right? Anytime that you're seeing a lot of green scum, that's not a great place to go be splashing around or spending time. So that might be a good day to be out on the boat and farther away from the shoreline. Or if you're just not feeling safe, a good day to just spend some time outdoors in another way. When it comes to the panfish question, a bit of good news there. So definitely these cyanotoxins do make their way into the food web. And so they do make their way into fish. But lots of studies have been done in trying to look at where those toxins end up within the fish. And as I mentioned a little bit briefly before, these microcystin toxins, they're a liver toxin. So we see the highest concentrations in things like the livers, kidneys, and intestines, and those don't tend to be organs that we're eating. And while there are definitely detectable concentrations in the tissues, the muscle of the fish, that's the part that we usually eat, right, when we're doing our fish fries, there are toxins in there, but they're at very low concentrations usually. And so unless there's a very, very bad toxic bloom and it happens a number of times over the lifetime of this fish, so it's accumulating that toxins, eating those fish are unlikely to be a danger to an individual.
Thanks for the questions. We're talking to Grace Wilkinson from the UW-Madison Limnology Department, looking at blue-green algae in Wisconsin lakes. Go back to your calls now. Patrick is with us in Menominee. Patrick, hi.
Hi, Grace. Nice to talk to you. In 2011, I invented and designed, built a machine to remove surface hepatotoxins or the blue-green algae up here in Dunn County. I'm in Menominee, and we have that extreme problem up here in Lake Cedar and Lake Monoman, which are part of the Red Cedar Waterway, which runs directly into the Mississippi River. So all was going fine and well until, and I was working under a DNR permit to do such, until we disposed of it. And then we had issues with the health department, and we had issues with the DNR and trying to dispose of such BGA. Mm. So my understanding is now in Madison, they are doing some removal of the BGA off the lakes down there and just simply disposing of it. The issue was with me was that I couldn't dispose of it because it would be removing it to an extra area with neurotoxins and hepatotoxins involved in it, that they were afraid that we were going to...
I'm going to jump in, Patrick, because we're just about out of time. But Grace, you mow the lake, in effect, take this blue-green algae out, and what do you do with it then?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And I can see where there is definitely that conflict there because it's this toxic substance and then removing it, where else do you put it, right? And so I have heard about this, what's happening here in Madison and with some blue-green algae removal. I'm not particularly familiar with the project, so I won't comment on that. But I definitely sympathize with that in being an issue, right? When you're taking something toxic out of the water in order to use that water resource, what do you do with the toxin, right? And it does persist in the environment. There are some bacteria that will degrade it and whatnot, but we don't necessarily want to be moving toxin around without knowing if we could reduce the potential harm to others. So that's a real catch-22.
Patrick, thanks for the call. Good luck getting that figured out. And Grace, that's all the time we have. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much. It's been great.
That was Grace Wilkinson, assistant professor at the UW-Madison Center for Limnology, principal investigator of the Wilkinson Limnology Lab. She joined us for a look at blue-green algae in Wisconsin lakes.